There is a war going on for your mind. Industry insiders slaying test tube babies to corporate crackheads. They flash logos and blast ghettos. Their embroidered neckties say, stop snitching. Conscious rappers and whistleblowers get stitches made of acupuncture needles and marionette strings. There is a war going on for your mind. Professional wrestlers and vice presidents want you to believe them. The desert sky is their blue screen. They superimpose explosions. They shout at you. Pay no attention to the men behind the barbed curtain, nor the craters beneath the draped flags. Those hoods are there for your protection, and the meteors these days are the size of corpses. There is a war going on for your mind.
We are the insurgents. And we are live. It's the Info Warrior, April 25th, 2010. We're going to take your calls the full 3 hours. And we're going to hit up some of these news stories telling you, oh yes, there will be new taxes. Get ready to pay to our lords in the federal government. We covered the story the last couple of weeks. Bernanke openly admitting, criminally confessing that yes, you will not have Social Security. You will not have Medicare. And yes, we are going to jack your taxes up. We're going to go over the postponement of the climate bill, Senator Kerry and others trying to propagandize, again, man-made global warming. It doesn't matter if the emails came out. It doesn't matter if they're top UN professors and scientists like Michael Mann and Phil Jones covered in Invisible Empire admit that there has been no global warming whatsoever for over a decade. They are still going to bring in the carbon tax. Last week, we went over a story of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, just implementing it. Not going to go through Congress, not going to go through the Senate, not going to go through constitutional government. They're just going to force you to pay. And we're also going to be talking about this new tax, which goes in nationally on tanning beds. The fight against vitamin D, the demonization of tanning beds. Did you think you would see the day? But when they have to really shut out all middle American industry, all self-owned businesses, and put these people under their thumb, under their control, they do have to start regulating things like tanning beds. And we're going to get into that story. We're going to take your calls all 3 hours, 888-201-2244. We are live. It is Sunday, April 25th. 2010. Let me just read you some of this Johnny nonsense. This is on MSNBC.com. Tanning bed industry feels burned by new tax. Healthcare reform levy could ruin them. See, this is your healthcare reform. These are the bills that you allow to be passed. Oh, everyone's going to get free healthcare. No, people are going to be taxed beyond recognition. They have set up the death panels. They are going to force you to buy health insurance, which will literally give you zero to nil coverage, and tell you it's the best thing since breakfast. It's prime season for tanning beds when young women pack indoor salons in search of bronze skin to go with their new bikinis. But business is slow this spring. Health warnings, they've been demonizing these beds for well over a decade, and the sun in general. Skin cancer, skin cancer, skin cancer, skin cancer. You're going to die, skin cancer. Health warnings about skin cancer risks or tanning beds combined with consumer foregoing non-essentials in this recession have the nation's estimated 18,000 tanning salons on hard times. Now they're bracing themselves for another hit. Hard times aren't enough. $27 trillion bailouts aren't enough. We are going to take more. We're going to take more and more and more and more. A 10% tax on tanning bed use starts nationwide this July, part of the federal health care overhaul. Yay! Federal health care is here and I can pay more for everything. Will I be here next year? I don't know, said Christy Alpers, owner of the Cherry Creek Tans in Denver. The tax will add 90 cents to a few dollars for a single tanning session, depending on the machine. It's a fee she thinks will bankrupt her. It's a fee she thinks will bankrupt her. And it is destroyed by design. This is not an accident. So we're going to be going over stories like these. We're also going to break down the bombshell new evidence about Building 7. And I think that we're going to play the entire Fabled Enemies World Trade Center 7 chapter so we can break down all the minutiae surrounding this new admission that, oh yes, Silverstein was on the phone seeing if he could get a controlled demolition of a 47-story skyscraper he owned. Meanwhile, it was the hotbed for intelligentsia in New York. We'll be back after this. It's the InfoWar with Jason Burmes. Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv, 888-201-2244.
I've been drifting along in the same stale shoes.
Ooh, Lord, trouble so hard. Ooh, Lord, my trouble so hard. Don't nobody know my trouble but God. Don't nobody know my trouble but God. Ooh, Lord, my trouble so hard. Ooh, Lord, my trouble so hard.
Don't we are back. Info Warrior with Jason Burmis. And while the economy is becoming bankrupt, as they are declaring open dictatorships and unions under the veil of saving the world, saving the earth, creating this new world order, which we document so heavily in my latest film, Invisible Empire, they mesmerize and hypnotize the public with bread and circus. And that modern day bread and circus has gone on for almost a decade in the form of American Idol. There is probably not a less worthy show to be on television than this overrated karaoke contest where people literally degrade each other on national television to become superstars and be in the public eye to clamor for that 15 minutes of fame. So sometimes I'm in my bedroom and I'm on my computer, but I don't have cable, so I've got the, not the bunny ears, but the modern antenna. And I click through, and I often put it on Fox so I can see reruns of The Family Guy and The Simpsons. And I get done with a Family Guy rerun, and in the background, I notice American Idol is coming on. Now, normally I would change the channel, but they mentioned that this was for charity. And I had seen a story on Drudge that day that this charity was basically a pro-abortion charity. Posing as something that was for children. I read the story last week very briefly. So I noticed that, oh, Barack Obama and his wife are opening the show, and they are smiling and laughing and giggling at you, the dumbed down viewer, telling you how important and how great American Idol is and how important it is to the culture and how they're doing such great and wonderful things. See, American Idol is good. Barack Obama is good. So we're going to play this clip that really turned my stomach. Everything that is wrong with America is the president and his wife sitting there in times of crises, times of hardships, not working on making us a better country, a more constitutional republic, but basically placating to the people, giving them what they want, which is dumbed down karaoke contests. Let's hit it.
Hello, everybody. American Idol has always been about changing lives on the stage and around the world. That's why Michelle and I want to take a moment to thank everyone watching tonight for your continued generosity as part of Idol Gives Back.
Over has raised more than $140 million to help children and families here in America.
What, do we have a buffering issue here? All right, well, I guess we're going to pull the clip, and we're going to try to play it in a moment. I don't understand what's wrong, but hopefully we can get it working in just a second. Meanwhile, there are headlines out there. Rich world may face next downturn with dull weapons. Rich countries may not be able to resharpen their crisis fighting tools fast enough to get them ready for the next downturn. And remember, they're using new terminology. It's not a depression anymore. It's a double dip recession. A double dip recession. Again, speaking to us like children. Hopefully we're going to be able to go back to this clip. But again, let's focus on how he opens it up. American Idol is about changing lives. Yeah, changing Simon Cowell's life from an empty bank account to one of over $500 million. That's the life it has changed. Let's hit it.
Over the years, this program has raised more than $140 million to help children and families here in America and around the world live healthier and happier lives. From fighting malaria in Africa to helping folks in our own communities put food on the table. Every dollar you give makes a difference for those in need.
We want to thank American Idol for the example they're setting and encourage everyone watching to make a contribution. And to this year's finalists, as Randy says, you're all my dogs.
And Simon, be nice.
Thanks, everybody.
Oh, they're so hip. They're so cool. Simon, you be nice. And they're my dogs. They're my dogs. Meanwhile, we are at a financial abyss, and everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. The headlines out here, I got a Fox News headline, debt commission job is a suicide mission. And who says this? This isn't some pundit. This is the co-chairman of that commission. He's saying it's a suicide mission. He knows we're bankrupt. He knows we have no money. He gets it. And they're slowly but surely telling you, yes, we're bankrupt. We don't have any money. It looks like it's time for the global currency now. SDR units are good. The IMF is trying to figure out a way for banks to pay them back. No, the IMF is part of the problem. They're part of the consolidation of power. They're part of grouping the SEC and the Federal Reserve under global banking dictatorships. IMF to keep mulling how to make banks pay for bailouts. Oh, how can we get the banks to pay back the $700 billion? Oh, wait a minute. It's not really $700 billion. It's 24 plus trillion 6 months ago, probably around 40 or 50 trillion now, folks. The International Monetary Fund pledged on Sunday. Oh, they pledged. They're such good people. They're working in our best interest. I pledge to help the American people. They pledged on Sunday to keep working on plans to make bankers bear the burden of their own bad behavior and not to lose heart over opposition due to their first ideas for a global bank tax. Who's going to be playing the global bank tax? Us, not the bankers. The bankers have given out in the past 2 years record bonuses one after the other after they got their bailouts. They're not feeling this crunch. And then they bring it into civil court with Goldman Sachs. Oh, we're going after Goldman Sachs. A couple guys will get a little slap on the wrist and that's it. It's a joke. It's a bad joke. And here they come, not only saying, hey, we're going to tax the sun, we're going to tax tanning beds, we're going into an economic downturn. Now the Senate is proposing their new climate bill. One of President Barack Obama's top priorities is tackling global warming. But it suffered a severe setback this Saturday when a fight over immigration derailed plans to unveil a compromise climate change bill. And they're probably going to wait for some other kind of crisis, some other big headline in the news to kind of sneak this by the American people. Because they realize the majority of us don't want to pay a tax to breathe. Yes, paying a tax to breathe, that's what carbon dioxide is. After I breathe air, carbon dioxide comes out. I guess I should start paying a tax on that. A bipartisan group of senators led by Democrat John Kerry has been aiming to outline details of their climate change bill on Monday. That plan was canceled after Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, a member of the working group, threatened to pull out if Democrats pushed for a debate on an overhaul of immigration before doing the huge environmental and energy legislation. Without Graham on board, efforts to pass climate control legislation could be doomed as he was expected to work to win more Republicans' support for the bill. Basically, how do you win more Republican support for the bill? Well, since it's not really a right or left issue, a Republican or Democrat issue, it's all about getting special interests to promise to fund their campaigns or give them kickbacks or promise their family members cushy jobs. That's how the system works. They don't care. They are literally setting up a tax on breathing. A tax on the size of your home. A tax on how many cars and children you have. And by the way, we have a story out of China. Apparently, they're talking about possibly repealing the one-child policy in China. Now, why would they do such a thing? Well, they understand this is a strong point for demonization and really realization that it is a military-type police state in China, that communism isn't good, that Mao is not our hero, that they are a pro-eugenic society. Now, does this mean they're really going to drop the one-child policy? No, they're going to ease it into the background and basically popularize examples where they let families have two children. Oh, wow, you'll allow me to have two children. Meanwhile, Ted Turner says that everybody in the world's got a pledge that one or two children is it. And he says voluntarily, but he by no means means that it should be voluntary. He's the president of the United Nations Foundation. He is pro-population control. He's the eugenics king, the guy who owns more landmass than any other person in the world, and he's going to tell me how many children I can have. And when you read this, this is out of the Associated Press, off the bat, they're demonizing these guys for having more than one child. When asked why she and her husband don't want a second child, I can't even pronounce it, smiles at her pudgy 9-year-old son and does a quick tally of the family budget. Her salary as a cleaning lady and the income for a mahjong parlor in the spare room barely covers their son's school fees and other expenses. See, they can't afford to send their son to school. They can't afford to feed them in their slave labor conditions, so they're not allowed to have more children. With just one, we can give him nicer things. But if we tried to split that, we have between two or three, they would end up with nothing, the 34-year-old says in her home of Daifeng. And that is the plan for the United States of America. Begin to bankrupt the populace in a manner where you can demonize them for having children. And there are already so many examples of those people out there that don't want to work, that want to live off the state, that do have a bunch of kids, that they rally all these other people that do work, that pay all these taxes and say, see? See, these people are the reason that you're paying higher taxes. No, they're not the reason. They're a very small portion of the taxes that you're paying. The reason is that out-of-control banksters have decided to tax everything under the sun and including the sun. Let me repeat that. Everything under the sun and now including the sun. That's the idea behind global warming. They don't want to talk about solar flares. They don't want to talk about the earth changing naturally. Yes, that's right. The earth changes. It's a living being. You know, I'm not saying it has a soul, but you got to understand, the earth is a life form. It is a life force. It is constantly changing. And can man have an effect on that? Absolutely. But are we the ones behind this quote-unquote non-existent global warming that the UN now admits has not been going on for the last 10-plus years, as well as glaciers melting that are non-existent? Of course not. We're taking your calls on the other side. It's 888-201-2244. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes.
Well, come on, all of you big, strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam.
And we are five, back. Six, it's the InfoWar with Jason Burmes. And again, as we move towards a society more like China, where they try to regulate every single thing we do, how many children we're allowed to live or allowed to have, how big our home is allowed to be, how many cars we're allowed to have, how much tax we have to pay, they have to make it seem like China is moving more in our direction. As we become more and more like their society, they're wearing the Levi's blue jeans and drinking the Coca-Cola and eating the processed food like McDonald's. So they move towards our society as we move towards theirs. We're going to take your calls, and then on the other side, we're going to play the chapter of World Trade Center 7 out of my, not my last film anymore. I've got Invisible Empire out there, but Fabled Enemies, the film before that one. All right, let's go to our first caller. Let's go to Jesse in Texas. Jesse, you're on the line. Yes, sir.
Hey, what's up, Jason? Yesterday I went out to eat with a friend of mine, and I had mentioned to her that I said that 9/11 happened to be an inside job, and I mentioned about Tower 7 and how that was a controlled demolition. So I'm trying to get her to sort of see things differently. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to do my part as far as, letting people know that these people are fascist. Well, I'm bastards. I don't think I say that on the air, but yeah, so.
No, they're bastards. So they absolutely are. They're cold-blooded killers, Jesse. They are cold-blooded killers. They killed 3,000-plus people on 9/11. They undoubtedly blew up World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7. 7 being the most obvious example of a controlled demolition in the fact that it was actually done in the regular bottom down. Instead of a top down demolition, it was a not so much a bottom up, but it came from the bottom first. You can see it basically fall into its own footprint. And you watch the World Trade Center demolitions, and they were a top down demolition. Now, debunkers will sit there and say, there's no such thing as a top down demolition, Jason. I ain't never seen no top down demolition. We played several of them on the air here on the InfoWar, and we may just do that again today. Kevin in Georgia. Kevin, you're on the line. Yes, sir.
Hey, Jason. Just calling in. Wanted to congratulate you on Invisible Empire and also congratulate Alex on Police State 4. Great films.
Excellent.
Yeah, but I was calling in. I wanted to ask you to get your mind and your thoughts on the Freemasons and how they are connected to the Illuminati. I'm currently reading The Illuminati 2012 by Nishin A. Kumapiro, and you know, Mark Dice touched on this in the Resistance Manifesto, and just wanted to get your intake on that.
Sure. Kevin, have you ever heard of a book called Proofs of a Conspiracy?
Absolutely.
Now, Proofs of a Conspiracy is a guy by John Robison, and it comes at it kind of as a pro-Mason perspective. He's a Mason in the original Scottish lodges out in Europe. And I've read this book, and it's very interesting. He kind of takes you step by step of the Illuminati infiltration into Masonry. Now, does that mean that I necessarily think that Masonry was good before, I guess, the quote-unquote Illuminati and the Weishaupt crowd got in there? I don't know. I really don't know where these schools, these mystery Babylon schools, really derive from. There's a ton of theories out there. There's a ton of things to look at. But I really like that book in the sense that it shows you how the Masons were really usurped during the late 1700s and well into the 1800s. And I think that the way that the Masons fit in is that, you know, a lot of the high-level guys are into the occult and into these upper echelons of Masonry. But then on the other end, they use the porch Masons for programs like CHIP, which is this child protection program where you go get your kid DNA databased and they take his thumbprint and a DNA swab and his teeth records and all this other stuff to put you into the system. So on the upper echelons of the Masons, you actually do have people that do rule things and run things and decide the way that our lives go, sometimes based on this occultic philosophy that I really don't understand, but you look at these guys and they are into the cult. And then you have the lower level guys that kind of think that they're just part of a beer drinking after fraternity. And they're used to kind of implement their smaller level plans and gain acceptance in the general public. So I hope that answered your question, Kevin. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Dan in Connecticut. Dan, you're online.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good.
Yeah, I need your help to start a trend. I'm actually a candidate for Congress, and what I did is I swore under penalty of perjury different things that I would do in office. And if you go to realdealforcongress.com, you can see that pledge. I basically want to make sure that I can get as many candidates as possible to commit to that, because we've seen too many people.
All right, Dan, we'll be back after this. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes, PrisonPlanet.tv, InfoWars.com.
Never remorse for you, no letters endorsing you. Pole position in the coffin is what is costing you. The caucus bosses who control the fortunes through the mortgages of a culture with losses through and through.
But it's the rebel arms.
Godspeed with devil's charm. The if made get switched.
We are back. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes. And I just want to say right here, folks, I'm not much of a trendsetter, but I am behind those that are behind the Constitution and Bill of Rights. So I hope you check out that guy's website and get behind his campaign if he truly does stand for something and that those pledges are positive ones. All right, I'm going to take a couple more callers, and then we're going to get into this new admission and play the chapter, The Third Skyscraper, from Fabled Enemies. Yes, we now know that this pro-authoritarian, pro-war writer who was there, he was there on 9/11. And Building 7 wasn't a controlled demolition, but he did hear the Con Edison workers and others discussing how Larry Silverstein was contacting his insurance company prior to the falling of Building 7 to see if he could pull off a controlled demolition there. You gotta understand, these buildings were pre-wired. They had, Building 7 alone had the largest CIA station outside of Langley, Virginia. They had other secret CIA offices in the Twin Towers. That's the reality. So let's take a couple more calls, and then we're going to hit up the third skyscraper. Let's go to Philip in Virginia, 888-201-2244. Philip, you're on the line.
Hey, Jason. Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. I am a college student here in Lynchburg, and I actually grew up in China,
mm-hmm.
and my parents they work over there,
mm-hmm.
and so I got firsthand experience on growing up in China and
well, tell us about it.
Life there and just what the Chinese think and in regards to abortions or. Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us what you think, because I had the guy who did the graphics on Invisible Empire had just come off a year prior, a 6-month stint over in China, and he described it as a place where there was people all over. They were very rude to one another. There were garbage in the streets. They felt helpless that they couldn't stand up against the government. He said it was also a very criminal society because you were basically had to prove the other guy was guilty and not that you were innocent. Those were the basic takes. He hated China. But what did you think of China growing up there, Philip?
I actually loved it.
Really?
Get a good experience. I can speak Chinese. Talking with a lot of the locals there, especially if, like the taxi drivers, you find out that, you ask them, what do you think the number one problem in China is? They'll say that it has too many people.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that it's almost like a preconditioning by the media that tells them that we need less people. We need the women to only have one child, et cetera.
So from cradle to grave, they're raised to believe there are already too many people in the society and that they have to find a solution in order to get down to less people, which is a dehumanization tool, which makes us less than a person. I appreciate the call, Philip. We're going to go to Ken in Maryland, and then we're going to hit the clip. Ken, you're on the line.
Hey, Jason, just want to give you kudos on your latest release.
Oh, thank you.
Really good film.
Well, what did you think was the best part, Ken? What was the best information or the part you enjoyed the most? What was it about Invisible Empire that was so good?
You got me on the spot. it's really nice how you put the graphics together. It was, I think mostly you put in some things that a lot of people don't really mention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have all these strings that are open, and they kind of like tie them all together. And that's a really good package for somebody who's just starting to learn how to find out about the New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice package for presenting the New World Order to somebody.
Excellent. So what else is on your mind, Ken?
I just got a question. Did you call into Christy's show on Thursday?
I don't even know who Christy is.
Christy Schakowsky. She has a program on another network.
No, I didn't call into any show. I did a radio interview, I think, Thursday and Friday, but it wasn't with a woman.
Yeah.
I did, a Meros radio on Friday or Thursday. I've been doing a lot of interviews for Invisible Empire, but that one doesn't ring a bell, and I certainly didn't just call into a talk show.
Yeah, well, it was a radio program, and it sounded like you, and the comment that was made was very profound, and
good job, Ghost Jason, or whoever did that. I'd like to hear it. Someone will probably throw it up on YouTube. Appreciate the call, Ken. All right, we're going to go to this clip. Now, remember, the breaking news is 9/11 wasn't an inside job. I'm an establishment reporter. I was there. There's no way Building 7 was a controlled demolition. But I did hear Con Edison workers and other people talking about Larry Silverstein calling his insurance company to see if he could carry out a controlled demolition of Building 7. And then it falls into its own footprint. It falls into its own footprint. Let me repeat that. It falls into its own footprint. So let's hit the third skyscraper from Fabled Enemies. A key hub for intelligence was the Salomon Brothers building, also known as World Trade Center 7. This was a massive 47-story skyscraper that would have dominated most city skylines. At 5:20 in the afternoon, it would collapse into its own footprint. It also happened to be New York City's number one spook house and operational center. It housed the Department of Defense, the Internal Revenue Services, the Security and Exchange Commission, the largest Secret Service office in the world, the largest CIA office outside of Virginia, and New York's Office of Emergency Management, or OEM.
Beyond the haunting presence of those still missing in the rubble, Ground Zero is filled with guns, drugs, and secrets. Number 7 World Trade Center was also the New York office of the Central Intelligence Agency. The CIA ordered the building surrounded by FBI agents shortly after it collapsed. Since then, they have been searching for computers and a safe filled with classified documents. Government agents watch the construction workers through binoculars as they search.
The OEM was where local government would rally in the case of an emergency, such as a terrorist attack or natural disaster.
The command center on the 23rd floor is bulletproof and bomb-resistant, with its own air supply and generators. It's linked to city airports, the Coast Guard, and the Pentagon. Computers will soon have detailed blueprints of every major building in New York City.
Surprisingly, it would be deserted when city officials Barry Jennings and Michael Hess arrived.
When the Office of Emergency Management did an activation, they always included our locale. I received the call shortly after the first plane hit. I got there, I had to be inside on the 23rd floor when the second plane hit. Upon arriving into the OEM EOC, we noticed that everybody was gone. I saw coffee that was on a desk. Still, the smoke was still coming off the coffee. I saw half-eaten sandwiches. And only me, Mr. Hess, was up there. After I called several individuals, one individual told me that to leave and leave right away.
Both would go on network television on 9/11 and make the claim they experienced explosions inside the building as they tried to evacuate.
I'll give you a live picture down Church Street. Fire crews now walking back toward the scene. We have seen them all morning trying to walk away, because what happens is every time a little piece of the building comes down, a huge black cloud comes at us, making it almost impossible to breathe or see anything in front of them. But now, at least for the past couple of minutes, it has been clear from this space back on Chambers in that area. So now they're walking back toward the World Trade Center. And as we keep letting you hear the personal stories, the survivor stories of exactly what happened inside the World Trade Center when that first plane went in, and of course the collapses since then, we're going to bring more of those to you now. Barry Jennings, you're on the 8th floor. You work for the City Housing Department. Explain to me the moment of impact.
Well, me and Mr. Hess, the Corporation Counsel, were on the 23rd floor. I told him we got to get out of here. We started walking down the stairs. We made it to the 8th floor. Big explosion. Blew us back into the 8th floor. And I turned to Hesh. I said, this is it. We're dead. We're not going to make it out of here. I took a fire extinguisher, and I bust the window out. That's when this gentleman here heard my cries for help. This gentleman right here. And he said, kept saying, stand by. Somebody's coming to get you. They couldn't get to us for an hour because they couldn't find us.
You thought that was it?
I thought we're dead. I thought that was it.
We have Frank Uciardo back on the phone with us, Brenda, with some New York City officials. Frank, go ahead.
That's right. I'm standing here right now just off Broadway by City Hall with Michael Hess, who is the city's corporation counsel. Mr. Hess, you were trapped in, I believe, 7 World Trade Center. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I was. I was up in the Emergency Management Center on the 23rd floor, and when all the power went out in the building, another gentleman and I walked down to the 8th floor where there was an explosion. And we've been trapped on the 8th floor with smoke, thick smoke, all around us for about an hour and a half. But the New York Fire Department, as terrific as they are, just came and got us out.
When I made it to the 6th floor, and there was an explosion, the explosion was beneath me. Keep in mind now, it's pitch black in there. All the lights went out. So when the explosion happened, it blew us back. I'm thinking I'm standing on the landing. I'm actually holding on to a pole above us.
Really?
And I had to climb back up because Hess is yelling, what do we do now? I said, there's only one thing we can do, and it's go back up. Both buildings were still standing. Keep in mind, I told you the fire department came and ran. They came twice. Why? Because building tower one fell, then tower two fell. And then when they came back with all concern now, like, to get me the hell out of there. I was trapped in there for several hours. I was trapped in there when both buildings came down. All this time, I'm hearing all type of explosions. All this time, I'm hearing explosions. When they finally got to us, and they took us down to what they called the lobby, because I asked them, I said, when we got down there, I said, where are we? He said, this was the lobby. And I said, you got to be kidding me. It was total ruins. Total ruins. Now, keep in mind, when I came in there, the lobby had nice escalators. It was a huge lobby. And for me to see what I saw, it was unbelievable. And the firefighter that took us down kept saying, do not look down. And I kept saying, why? He said, do not look down. And we were stepping over people. And you know you can feel when you're stepping over people.
This building would fall into its own footprint at 5:20 in the afternoon at nearly free fall speed. Almost 7 years later, there has still been no official reason given, but some have given the false impression that damage caused by the collapse of the Twin Towers brought 7 down. Despite the fact that no other surrounding buildings acted in this manner. Dr. S. Shyam Sunder would make the claim on behalf of the National Institute of Standards and Technology that on about a third of the face, to the center and to the bottom, approximately 10 stories, about 25% of the depth of the building, was scooped out. Here is the south face of World Trade Center 7. Does it look like one-fourth of the building is gone? Perhaps we should take a look inside. It appears it is not scooped out after all. Members of the media were reporting that the building had collapsed due to structural damage and fire, more than 20 minutes prior to it going down.
Now, more on the latest building collapse in New York. You might have heard a few moments ago, I was talking about the Salomon Brothers building collapsing, and indeed it has. Apparently that's only a few hundred yards away from where the World Trade Center towers were, and it seems that this was not a result of a new attack. It was because the building had been weakened during this morning's attacks. We'll probably find out more now about that from our correspondent, Jane Stanley. Jane, what more can you tell us about the Salomon Brothers building and its collapse?
The building can clearly be seen in the background as Jane Stanley reports its demise.
Jane, I think many of us, when we heard the news, perhaps on the radio earlier today, were...
The feed would be cut before the building collapsed.
And just... couldn't comprehend it. I mean, it almost sounded too far-fetched. I was wondering what it felt like for you being in Manhattan. Well, unfortunately, I think we've lost the line with Jane Stanley.
They called me down. I think it was part of the 9/11 commission. They asked me the same questions that you guys are asking me. And at that point, they said, okay, thank you. And they sent me on my way.
And yeah, you told them pretty much everything you just told us.
Yes.
That you were in the building, got rocked by an explosion.
Yes.
All that.
Yes.
And you know that they didn't mention Building 7 once in the commission report.
I told them that's where I was. It was very, to tell you, it was very scary because they looked like very important people.
Yeah.
They were questioning me about certain things. And, I don't know if they liked the answers I gave. I could care less. I gave my account of it, the truth, and that was it. That day I'll never forget. And the explanations that were given to me is totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. I'm just confused about one thing and one thing only. Why World Trade Center 7 went down in the first place. I'm very confused about that. I know what I heard. I heard explosions. The explanation I got was it was the fuel oil tank. I'm an old boiler guy. If it was a fuel oil tank, it would have been one side of the building.
And there it is, folks. That is the third skyscraper chapter from Fabled Enemies. You can get Fabled Enemies and my latest film, Invisible Empire, together, as well as Loose Change Final Cut for only $34.95 over at Infowars.com right now. And the person you were hearing there throughout it was Barry Jennings, who is no longer with us. He went on television that day along with the city's corporation council on two separate networks. We just played it for you, showing you they were talking about those explosions on the eighth floor on that very day. That very day, Michael Hess refused to accept my phone calls, my emails, my faxes to his office and give us the interview. Barry Jennings was good enough to do so, and unfortunately, he is no longer with us. On the other side of the next break, we're going to continue to take your calls. 888-201-2244. I want to get your take on this latest Building 7 news, as well as all the other economic news that we have gone over. And we're also going to go over some of the propaganda out there still promoting the H1N1 shots. After all this time, H1N1, we're still promoting it. Back after this is the InfoWar with Jason Burmes, InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv. InfoWarrior with Jason Burmes. We are live over at InfoWars.com and, of course, PrisonPlanet.tv. Only $5.95 a month for a membership, and you get all of my films and all of Alex Jones's films, as well as the daily radio show broadcast and this once a week broadcast, The InfoWarrior with myself. All right, let's go to Dennis in New York. Dennis, you're on the line. Yes, sir.
Hello, Jason.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm from your neck of the woods.
Oh, excellent.
I'm down in Binghamton.
Oh, cool.
And I go places with the InfoWars t-shirts and hats, and I hear nothing. I'm probably one of the few people who listen from this city.
Really? You know, that Binghamton's only about 40, 45 minutes away from where I am. It's on the border of Pennsylvania there, and I find a lot of awakened people, at least in my neck of the woods in Oneonta. Maybe it's because there are a couple colleges there, and there is kind of this underground loose change phenomenon, even InfoWars phenomenon. I'll go into some of the bar stalls, and InfoWars.com will be scrawled on the bathrooms. But, you know, if nobody's saying anything to you, maybe it's time to get some DVDs, leave them at restaurants. I wear the Investigate 9/11 t-shirt a lot. I wear the 9/11 was an inside job t-shirt a lot. I wear the Obey Arnold t-shirt a lot. And more recently, the Defend Freedom one as well. Maybe the Orwell quote one. That's a good one. I get comments on the Orwell one out in Austin quite a bit. But don't give up hope, man. I see actually a big surge of truth in the upstate New York region, especially with the women who fought taking the H1N1 shots as nurses in Albany, saying, no, we're not taking mandatory shots. And that shows you what you can do when you get motivated and activated. You can go up against the system and win. Appreciate the call, Dennis. Let's go to Joe in New Jersey. Joe, you're on the line.
Yo, what's up, Jason?
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. Good.
What's this new Building 7 information just came out?
All right, sure.
What's up?
Yeah, all right. So there's a guy out there. His name is, I believe, Jeffrey Scott is the author of this article. It was a Fox News article attacking Jesse Ventura. Now, as he's attacking Jesse Ventura, he's like, I was there. There were no bombs in Building 7. How dare you say such a thing? But then I'm going to read you the quote of what he also said. I remember getting a... Oh, you know, this is... I'm sorry, that's the Silverstein quote. It's Jeffrey Shapiro. Let's see. Hold on, I got to find the actual quote right here. Okay, here we go. Shortly, and this is Jeffrey Scott Shapiro states, I was working as a journalist for Gannett News and at Ground Zero that day, and I remember very clearly what I saw and heard. Shortly before the building collapsed, several NYPD officers and Con Edison workers told me that Larry Silverstein, the property developer of One World Financial Center, was on the phone with his insurance carrier to see if he would be able to authorize the controlled demolition of the building, since its foundation was already unstable and expected to fail. So, again, they say there wasn't a controlled demolition there. This guy says, I didn't hear any bombs. But here he actually admits that different NYPD police officers and Con Edison workers were in the know that Silverstein was trying to contact his insurance agency to see if he could pull off a controlled demolition that day. And we all know it takes months and months to wire those buildings for a controlled demolition. But the truth of the matter is they were pre-wired, and he probably had to get permission because something went wrong with the plan. And we all know about the Pullet comment. We didn't put it in Fabled Enemies, but let me read you that quote. We can probably play it for you in the next segment. I remember, this is from Larry Silverstein himself, I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire, and I said, we've had such a terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is to pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and we watched the building collapse. And right after that, in the PBS special, they showed them pulling Building 6, which is demolishing Building 6. So here we have yet another mainstream reporter, Joe, and we're going to come back to you on the other side, admitting that Silverstein was looking to bring the building down before it happened. I want to get your take on the other side, Joe, and so much more. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis. Just joining us, we just played the third tower, the third skyscraper chapter out of Fabled Enemies, and we went over the latest news about Building 7. Let's read the quote, and then we're going to go back to Joe in New Jersey. This is from Jeffrey Scott Shapiro. Shortly before the building collapsed, several NYPD officers and Con Edison workers told me that Larry Silverstein, the property developer of One World Financial Center, was on the phone with his insurance carrier to see if they would authorize the controlled demolition of the building, since its foundation was already unstable and expected to fail. And the foundation was fine. We just showed you the inside of the building from the south face in the video. Joe, what's your take?
The first thing I'd like to ask you is just a straight-out question. Mm-hmm. Were the Enron records vaulted in 7?
Yes. But they're not the only ones. The SEC records were also there as well. The major SEC scandal records were there. The Enron records were there. And then so much more. In that Fabled Enemies piece, I show you the mainstream news piece where they admit there was a bunch of classified documents that they had to not only get but protect. So they brought the FBI in to encompass the surrounding of what was the building. And then they sent in special FBI agents to go in there while CIA and other special forces watched them from the tops of other buildings to ensure that they didn't carry out classified material without going through the intelligence networks first. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, great. Just a sidebar real quick. Mm-hmm. The FBI just seized a whole bunch of Enron records from Goldman Sachs. I don't know if you know that or not.
And is that in part of this civil trial, or are they saying that's something separate?
They raided the offices at Goldman Sachs and pulled Enron records.
Interesting.
I want you to back-check that, too. The other thing I need you to back-check, too, is also, or if you can investigate into it, was supposedly that was a the orchestrating perch for the Tower 1, Tower 2.
You know, I don't believe that, and let me tell you why. A lot of people say that, they must have used that as their command center. But then you listen to Barry Jennings' testimony, and he was in the Office of Emergency Management, which was the 23rd floor, which is where the OEM was. Now, on other floors, you did have Department of Defense, you did have CIA, but they blew up the inside of that building. That's where those fires came from. It didn't come from the towers falling down. It was from those internal explosions. So I don't think it was the command center, because they actually had, first of all, they had Tripod 2 going on there. And in the OEM, they were running this drill, and Giuliani was in Building 7 on the morning of 9/11. He admitted it. And that's where they evacuated from. And if you listen to Jennings' testimony, he says when he got there, it was after the first plane strike, but before the second, they still had hot coffee and ham sandwiches that were half eaten all over the place, which means that they made a very quick evacuation. And then they shut the power off in the building. Now, I don't know how you're going to orchestrate the rest of 9/11, a.k.a. the demolitions of 1 and 2, after you've already flown the buildings in from 7 with the power out. And why put yourself in jeopardy there There's so many other surrounding buildings. The Woolworth Building is one. I think that's part of a disinfo campaign. Just because the CIA was there doesn't mean the CIA wasn't in other parts of that structure. Remember, that's Building 7. There was Building 6. There was Building 5. Those received heavy damage. There was buildings outside of the array of the World Trade Center, which were just as close and probably better to use as an operational center. But the bottom line is, Joe, it doesn't look like any of that's the truth. The evidence leads me to believe that these attacks were probably carried out from the Doomsday Command Center planes known as E-4Bs. Now, are you aware of the E-4Bs on the morning of 9/11, Joe?
Yes, I was there, and I was at Exit 15. I'm the guy that was supposed to send you all those pictures that I was really nervous to send them to you. I was there on the property.
Well, you should send them, man. Look, the way to go is to go as public as you can. You don't want to end up being one of these guys that had information and didn't put it out there. And for those that don't know what these E-4Bs are, and I appreciate the call, Joe, these are literal command centers for shadow government and DOD entities within the government. And they're running drills that morning where they just happen to be on the scene of all the attacks. Huh, what do you know? Doomsday operational centers for the shadow government are on the scenes of the 9/11 attacks as they occur. We're going to go to Mike, Craig, Scott, Glenn, and many others on the other side. It's 888-201-2244. Back after this, it's the Info Warrior. Fresh out of the Financial Times, U.S. prepares to push for global capital rules. The U.S. is preparing to pivot from domestic regulatory reform. Domestic, within your own country, sovereign nation status for the American people, for a tough new international globalist New World Order capital regime. After the weekend's G20 and International Monetary Fund meetings glossed over differences between leading economies. Oh, more G20, more globalization, a move towards international regulation and reform. And as we highlight in Invisible Empire, a new world order defined on shelves now over at YouTube now at the highest quality at prisonplanet.tv. Now, we show you Gordon Brown calling for a global financial constitution. We show you the head of the European Union, Van Rompuy, saying 2009 was the first year of global governance with the Copenhagen Conference and the G20. It is out of their own mouths, folks. All right, let's continue with the callers. Mike in Texas. Mike, you're online. Yes, sir.
Hey, man, I was say, I have a request for you about your, I guess, your Invisible Empire. Yes, sir?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm here.
You there?
Yeah, listening.
Hey, if you guys can, man, when you make expanded extras, can you make just a thing of just nothing but the New World Order clips where you got the guys talking about a New World Order, when you make that expanded extras, just make like a, I don't know how long it'd be, like a 5 or 10 minute video.
I mean, more like than that. I didn't put in about at least half of the clips that I had. I just couldn't fit them all in. And that's why we did that little thing at the end. But we've already done the extras on the DVD. Unless I do a director's cut or something like that, that's just not going to be possible. On the extras on the DVD is my experience over at the G20, little 8 to 10 minute wrap up over there. And then an extended interview with Peter Dale Scott concerning the continuity of government and shadow government issues, which is a little over 12 minutes. And you can get that over at prisonplanet.tv. But some people, Mike, have told me that they don't like the fact that I used all the New World Order clips. They're like, oh, it's just New World Order clips. But other people are very enthusiastic with the fact that I used a ton of New World Order clips that weren't on the web before to really establish the fact that the people calling for a New World Order aren't just George Bush Sr. and David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger, but all these other people like James Woolsey, the former head of the CIA, the current head of Google, Hans Blix is in there, even Bill Moyers is in there, Cornel West is in there, Michael Mullen, Paul Wolfowitz, David Cameron, and many others. I mean, what was your take? What was your favorite part of Invisible Empire? Was it the New World Order quotes, Mike? We still got Mike, or is he?
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. I mean, when I'm sitting here on a street. No, I'm here.
Yeah,
when
I'm
out here on a street to the mouth-breathing fluoride heads, mm-hmm. you know, I say, you say, man, you know what? There's a new world order. And they're like, nah, man, there's no new world order. And those clips are so powerful. Like, I mean, I could go out there and make a little tiny YouTube video of those clips, but, I mean, mm-hmm. you guys are professional. You guys got all the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
If y'all could just put together, like, a 5 to 10 minute of nothing but New World Order clips, I guarantee you that right there would be so powerful, because I could just hand you my iPhone with it and be like, look, you tell me there's New World Order, and sit there for 5 minutes of New World Order, New World Order.
All right, Mike, listen, I'll keep it under consideration, and maybe over the next month while I'm still here in Texas, I'll put together a little YouTube clip extra from Invisible Empire. No promises. But I'll definitely keep it under consideration. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Craig in Philadelphia. Craig, you're on the line.
Yes, hey, sir. Berman, can you hear me well? Should I
yes,
turn up the
sir.
Volume?
No, you're good. You're good. You're good.
Okay, first time caller, many year listener, loved Fabled Enemies, Encantado with Invisible Empire, and it seems like you're the point man for InfoWars. Congrats.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Okay, number one, make a copy of your video, hand it out to people. Give us a cover to print.
Okay, okay.
I suggested this a couple times. You know, compliments of Alex Jones, compliments of Jason Vermes, and compliments of an AJ member.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we need a cover up there that you guys can print to go with the DVD. Any other requests?
And a round one would be good.
A round one. Okay, so you're saying one for the one that you could actually... The DVD label is what you're looking for.
Right, exactly.
Okay,
trying to get them, but I got to make them. Okay, number two, the pause in Bush's reading about goats out of sequence. I read in the Washington Post or some one of those papers the day after 9/11 that there was an airliner that there's a bunch of Arab-looking people that were going, we have to go now, we have to go now. And they sent the plane back to the terminal. Mm-hmm. And it threw everything out of sequence. I believe that plane, I think the first plane was supposed to hit Washington and the Capitol building, mm-hmm. and then they could say what we did. We lost our command and control, martial law, we go to New York.
Mm-hmm.
But the planes went out of sequence, which is why Bush had to read about goats, because he didn't know what to do. He's not good without a script, and Murphy's Law helped us.
Well, you know, it's under my... study that I don't think that Bush had anything to do with the planning or even really knew what was going on, other than the fact that there was maybe some talk of some war games going on that day, and he had kind of a roundabout view. I think that Cheney was definitely in the know. He was used to facilitate the strike on the Pentagon, and the people that Craig is talking about were actually in Fabled Enemies. There were other flights out there that were actually named hijacked. The four planes that were hijacked didn't emit hijack codes, but eight other planes did emit hijack codes. And then we had all these other Arabs that were on a plane that refused to get off. And then when the police were called, they did get off, they left, and they were never seen again. And they looked in their, again, mainstream news reports, they looked in their bags, and lo and behold, oh, they had the same Al-Qaeda manuals and the same plane manuals as well. But I think that's a setup. I think those guys knew they were being set up. They were part of some drills, and they got out of there. So did everything go according to plan on 9/11? Absolutely not. But they knew that, and that's why they had all these drills to confuse the people that would try to stop it and then control the situation with the media. Appreciate the call, Craig. Let's go to Scott in Washington. Scott, you're on the line.
Yeah, Jason, a couple of things I wanted to talk about. The first thing, you know, I have a theory about this article that came out about the 9/11 attacking Jesse Ventura. And even though I know he says that he's not going to run, but if he by chance decided he was going to run for president, you know, what a thing would it be to start the attack dogs out early and stuff. I mean, if you go, they know that, you know, he has credibility as a politician. You know, he's got a number one rated show. He's got this book out.
And one of their establishment heads of the media, Larry King, who I don't really think that he knows. He's a propagator of the establishment. He's kind of one of those guys that's a swinger behind the scenes. He's on wife number 9 or 10 at this point. But he likes Ventura. And he had Ventura host the Larry King Show, which Larry King Live is one of the biggest political talk shows out there with one of the biggest histories out there. And I don't think the establishment likes to see Ventura taking the spot of Larry King, who's really on his deathbed. I mean, Larry King might not be around another 10 or 15 years. Can you imagine Ventura with that venue? So I agree with you there, Scott. It looks like they're trying a couple little preemptive jabs and strikes against Ventura, and I'm sure they don't like that American Conspiracies is such a powerful book. I've been continuing to read it, and now my Facebook quote is actually, I should get that book in here, because he had a great quote from Martin Luther King Jr. in that book that I'm currently using, and we'll read after the next break. But go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, that's right. I almost forgot about the Larry King thing. The second thing that I wanted to mention, and I know he's a friend of Alex, that guy that he had on Friday, that Doug Stanhope or Stanoff, whatever.
Stanhope.
Yeah. You know, with the exception of not denying 9/11 truth and some of these things, he sounds like a Bill Maher wannabe to me. I mean, some of the stuff that he was joking around with, you know, talking about sodomy and, you know, wanting a after the New World Order, it's pretty sad and pretty sick. And do these people understand, and not just him personally, but do they understand that, you know, these people mean that they don't want people like him around, like us. He's one of the us. He's not one of the them. And, it's just...
Well, I think that Stanhope does get that on some level, but at the same time, he's just one of those guys that just wants to be left alone. And if you've ever seen his comedy, it is rather raunchy. I'm actually a big fan of his last big comedy special out there, No Refunds. But I wouldn't call him so much a Bill Maher wannabe because, A, he's not that politically involved, and B, when he does mention politics, he seems to go a little harder core. Then Bill Maher, Loose Change is the film that really convinced Stanhope that 9/11 was an inside job. He's actually met the other Loose Change guys. I saw him briefly in here quickly. But I hear your frustration that people like himself sit there and say, well, Alex, you know, if you just focused on one thing, they don't see the bigger picture. They don't see the dire need for people to get over their apathy, to take action, to stand up against the system, and that it is bigger than just 9/11 was an inside job. If those people aren't safe, then you're not safe, and I'm not safe. Appreciate the call, Scott. We're going to go to Glenn in Kansas in just a moment, but I wanted to read this quote. This book is so awesome. Larry King on the cover says, if you're talking outspoken, unconventional, and no holds barred, you're talking Jesse Ventura. And this quote right here, I wasn't able to sleep the other night, so I got through the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. chapter. He who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as he who helps to perpetrate it. He who accepts evil without protesting against it is really cooperating with it. Truer words were never spoken. Glenn in Kansas. Glenn, you're on the line. Yes, sir.
How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, Jason, you there?
Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, Jason, I just viewed your Invisible Empire. I really liked it.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Well, I liked the part of it that's surreal. It looks like you and my son were in cahoots on it.
But, what are you talking about? Kind of the intro where we go through the movie theater and into this garbage-filled New World Order apex kind of deal where you see the pyramid and maybe the eye on the other side. We're going to come back to Glenn. We're going to go to Aaron, John, Sherry, Michael, Chris, and others. 888-201-2244. It's the InfoWars with Jason Burmes. Only at InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. It's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmes, and we're on the line with Glenn in Kansas. And Glenn, you mentioned that it had Invisible Empire kind of had this surreal look at times. Well, I like how you enjoyed it, and you said, you know, you and myself and your son might be in cahoots on this, because I hope that this is a film that can reach out to the high school student, the college student, but isn't too quote-unquote hip or flashy for someone in their middle ages, because this is not about preaching to the choir. It's about bringing new people into the movement to understand that the threat of a new world order, one based on tyranny and dictatorship, is very real, Glenn.
Well, I was looking at it, and of course, he's a grown man. Mm-hmm. He does video editing. He attended the Chicago Art Institute, and mm-hmm. of course, he's got a video up on MySpace called "Big Old Fat Old Man." But a lot of it is pretty surreal the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of unusual. that you kind of, I wished I would have sent him down to Texas. He could have helped you out.
And Lord anyway, knows I could use the help. It
well,
is kind of
know,
a one-man show.
That could be fun.
No,
well,
no, it's, I'm telling you, man. I mean, if you look at that film, and, you know, I did half the graphics on it. My one editor did the other half, obviously. And then there's Rob Jacobson that was involved. But no more than four people touched that movie. And to build a two-hour-plus documentary of that caliber, it's almost unheard of. When you see the studios and the kind of sets that they have, and somebody does the audio, and somebody does the video, and somebody conducts the interviews. We really are a one-stop shop to make these films, Glenn. And that's why I think that there's so powerful, because they come from the heart, and we drive to get them better and better every time. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Aaron in Pennsylvania. Aaron, you're on the line.
Hey, Jason. It's a pleasure being on with you this evening.
Thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to see if you actually watched the television show Prison Break. Recently, it was just released on the DVD, and I managed to watch the entire monolithic set.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you were aware of the of how explicitly it speaks about the New World Order and refers to themes that are kind of common to the show and to Alex's show.
No, you know, I've heard a little bit about it. One of my friends was a big fan, followed the whole seasons. But how is it New World Order specific, I guess?
Well, there's a group in this show, and as you know, it's one of the shows that is one of the big shows on Fox, or was one of the big shows on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty good at promoting this kind of agenda. Anyway, the purpose of the show is to talk about the adventures of this group of people who are fighting against a shadowy organization, kind of a shadow government called the Company.
Uh-huh.
And the Company kind of has all these technologies that no one else has, and controls everything that has to do with politics in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's another element, too, in which the Company brings forward a group of criminals from Chicago, actually, and puts them in the White House and does a great deal of damage with those people. And this is a show that started in 2004, so this was well before Obama was ever put it off.
Well, that is very interesting, and I've heard that sort of thing. So the guys that are actually in the prison, they're going after this group and trying to expose them, and that's why they're in the prison?
That's true, yes. And then towards the end of the show, it's revealed that the activities of this Company group that they've been fighting against with their life and limb are actually good, and that they should actually join in these activities.
Isn't that always the spin? Oh, they're doing it for our own good, and we see that time and time and time and time again. They act like the saviors. They pose as somebody with a helping hand when really they're just trying to consolidate power and reign as the head dictators or the apex of the power structure. Appreciate the call, Aaron. Let's go to John in West Virginia. John, you're on the line. Yes, sir.
Hi. I heard you talking a couple weeks ago. I think it was a couple weeks ago where you were just hoping that there would come a time when you could go online and watch Cheney sitting in his jail cell. You remember that?
Yeah, well, I've talked about that for a long time. Basically, I'm one of those proponents that wants to see a real trial based on 9/11, not one of these international kangaroo courts or one of these, you know, finding committees where we appoint people not to investigate and not to cross lines. That document came out about 2 months ago. But let's give the family subpoena power. Let's put Cheney on the stand. Let's prosecute him. And then the punishment should be that we set up a maximum security prison. I mean, they're setting up a world security prison where everybody is tracked, traced, and databased, and our entire lives are taped and basically watched by Big Brother. So why don't we do that to them? We'll set them up with a nice little prison system. We'll have cameras in all the rooms. And then at 3 a.m, when Dick Cheney is crying on the toilet because he's spending the rest of his life in a maximum security prison, we can tune into a cable station broadcasting that. I think that's the ultimate solution. I'm going to come back to John, Sherry, Michael, Chris, and others. It's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmes, 888-201-2244. Back, it's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmes. I want to remind everybody, Invisible Empire is on the market. You can get it right now at PrisonPlanet.com or InfoWars.com. And somebody just made a a bibliography for it. I posted it over on my Facebook, facebook.com/TheInfoWarrior, and it's pretty impressive, but could be added to. But now people asking me for a bibliography, I at least have something to point towards. All right, we're going to go back to John in West Virginia, and we were talking about prison time for Cheney. What else you got for me, John?
Well, I wanted to say that I don't agree with you, because if you look at it, it seems the type of crime that was involved, and especially if there's a way to link it to the economic disaster that happened in 08, it looks like high treason and it's execution, and I think that
that's too easy, though. All right, here's my deal, John. It's not necessarily that I'm against the death penalty, but that's a quick out for these guys. I don't want to see a quick out for these guys. I'd like them to see another 15, 20, 30 years of their life in solitary confinement so they know what kind of a system they were willing to put other human beings in. I think you put these guys in a firing squad or a noose or a guillotine, that almost makes them martyrs in a sense. You know, 100 years down the line, if these people are able to change history yet again, and we know they're very good at that, they can say, look at these poor people being prosecuted for trying to bring in a one-world government. They were executed. No, we should be very humane to them, and I think that they should be prosecuted, punished, and punished according to the law, but I wouldn't go with the execution. I honestly think that my solution is much, much harder on them. I really think that that is an easy out. It's a snap of the finger and they're over with their punishment. I think that they should serve hard time in prison. But you're welcome to your very own opinion. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Sherry in Georgia. Sherry, you're on the line.
Hey, Jason. I just wanted to say great job with Invisible Empire.
Oh, thank you.
I haven't had the chance yet to see the full version of Police State 4. Mm-hmm. And I have been able to see clips.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to let you know with what I'm doing in my community is I've started a website, a Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
I have a meeting with my county sheriff to keep things like what's happening in Police State 4 from hitting my county.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because you're activating locally. A lot of people think, oh, I have to do this big national thing, or where do I get started? But just by having a Facebook group in your local community and having these meetings, you are having an effect. So tell people about that. Tell people about where you're from Georgia, and how you got that group started through Facebook and what you're doing now.
Okay. You read an article from the Barrow Journal?
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Barrow County.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Facebook page called Citizens of Barrow County for Change.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also in the process of building a website, citizensofbarrowcountyforchange.org.
Mm-hmm.
It's not up and running yet. I am set up a meeting with my county sheriff and am going to try to work with him to get the police officers and the deputies and him in line with the Oath Keepers. You know, they took an oath for our Constitution, right? You know, uphold our Constitution. I want to see that enforced.
Well, that's great, and it's good that you're going to the local sheriff. A lot of people don't understand that the sheriff is who you want to talk to, because they are literally in charge of law enforcement for that county. I encourage more people to take after Sherry's example and get involved locally. That's how you can begin to make a difference. Sherry, keep going. I love what you're doing. We're going to go to our next caller. Let's go to Michael in Florida. See, folks, you have to be the change you want to see in the world. That doesn't mean that you have to become a member of We Are Change or be a radio show host or a documentary filmmaker or Cindy Sheehan. You can just get involved on constitutional issues in your local community. And if that's not your cup of tea, there are many other things you can do as well. Michael, you're on the line.
Hey, Jason. I just wanted to ask you about, have you seen the film after the Polish plane crash?
You're talking about the film where they zoom in on a few separate people, look like they're running around in the background, and then there's kind of like this blurry, maybe a person by what looks to be like the tail section, but you do, I think it's almost indisputable that you are hearing gunshot fire, right?
Yeah, that was my impression, and I also read that the videotaker got shot. And then
you know, I've heard that same thing, too, that he died like a couple days after he put that video out. I don't know if the second part is true, but I can tell you I have watched the video. It is very suspicious. It does look like there are people running around in the background during the plane crash. Gunshots can be heard, and that would lead more credence that they did kill those people.
Yeah, I read the thing about him being stabbed in kind of a not so credible location, so I was asking if, you know.
No, you know what? That's the thing. I had not seen anything credible as to the stabbing or the murder of the eyewitness there, but since most of that stuff isn't in English and the Western media really isn't covering it, I can't tell you one way or the other. But yes, Michael, I have watched the video. The video does make me a little bit more suspicious of the event, as if it shouldn't be suspicious that the Polish president and the majority of his cabinet were in one plane that suddenly crashed just as he was speaking out against the European Union. However, that video does lead more credence to it, but I don't know if, you know, about the guy getting murdered or any of those kind of conspiracy theories. But if somebody out there that speaks the language, that can understand this stuff and put together something comprehensive in English, we'd be willing to post it over at Infowars.com. Appreciate the call, Michael. Let's go to Chris in Indiana. Chris, you're online.
Hey, Brother Jason, thank you.
You got it.
Hey, I live up near Notre Dame University, and it's Obamaville up here. Total Obamaville. And what I've been doing is putting your films and Alex's films on DVD in the AVI format.
Mm-hmm.
And putting media converters and media players on there, because a lot of people have the Xbox 360 and whatnot, and they are able to play. And I'm telling you right now, and then I'm not putting any kind of copy of protection on top of that. They've gone viral around here.
And that's the way to do it. People don't understand that what's so cool about PrisonPlanet.tv is that you can go and get the DivX AVI versions of my films and Alex's films. Now, you can usually fit 3 to 6 films on one simple disc, depending on how large it is. And like you said, you hand it to somebody who has a PlayStation 3 or a Xbox 360, and they now play on those players just like a DVD. We're in the modern age. So on top of that, they also play through YouTube. So if you're on Xbox Live, Chris, you can be talking to a group while you're playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare or Halo 3 in one of those group things and say, hey, check out this film Invisible Empire for free on YouTube. And they go to the link and they watch it. There's so many ways to spread the word through this modern technology. And that's what scares the establishment. They don't have full control over the internet and social networking via these video game consoles that are ever so popular.
It just takes 5 minutes to burn a disc, and it's amazing the results.
All right, Chris, I appreciate the call. I appreciate the call. Go InfoWarriors. See, there is yet another example of how you can get involved. He's not talking to his local sheriff. He's getting involved with his local community by awakening people to the Obama deception, to Fall of the Republic, to the invisible empire that surrounds us. Mike, in Massachusetts. Mike, you're online. Yes, sir.
Hi, Jason.
Yes.
Good to talk with you. We've been listening to you guys, you and Alex, for a long time now, and we love you because you're so accurate. Everything you do is so well documented, and I mean, we take it as the biblical truth because you guys are just awesome. You know?
Well, thank you.
However, you said something earlier in today's show that disturbed me a little bit.
All right, let's hear it.
You said you didn't think Bush knew about 9/11.
No, I don't.
Well, he very certainly did. And
all right, Mike. Before we get into a big argument about it, but I'm going to let you say your piece, and maybe we'll take up the rest of the segment with it. His father, to me, is much more of a player in the sense that he puts together these intelligence ops. He was a part of the shadow government back when he was the vice president under Reagan. He was actually in the White House on the morning of 9/11, while his son was not. Now, I'm going to listen to your evidence that you think that he may have known something about 9/11 beforehand. He definitely was warned in the PDB memos on that level with Osama bin Laden, determined to attack the United States with suicide hijacked planes. That's the August PDB. So on that level, sure, did he know? But I just don't believe that he knew that he was in the middle of a black operation, a U.S. covert operation in conjunction with Israel, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia. But I'm going to give you the floor. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you very much, Jason.
You got it.
I'm sure you've seen the video of where he was and what he was doing at the time when the planes flew into the building.
Absolutely.
Are you familiar with that? Yeah,
he was in front of a bunch of
middle schoolers ready to give a speech.
Mm-hmm.
A few minutes after it happened, a CIA guy or an FBI guy or whatever.
The Secret Service agent, actually.
Whispers in his ear.
Yep.
And what does Bush do? What happens then? He sits back with a little half a smile on his face and folds his hands in his lap. Mm-hmm. He'd just been told that the U.S. was under attack.
Mm-hmm.
And what does he do? He sits back with a little smile. Mm-hmm. Now, come on, Jason.
Well, let me say this, though. The guy, hold on, Mike. Let me say, because I've looked at that tape thousands of times, and the guy that you're talking about is Andrew Card. Andrew Card is a Secret Service officer and a member of the continuity of government program. And he's the one that walks up to Bush, and God knows what he mumbles into his ear. It may be the U.S. is under attack, or we're under attack, or the World Trade Center is under attack. I think that's a look of nervousness. Now, I don't know if that's nervousness that, oh my God, we're under attack, I don't know what to do. Oh my God, they actually went through with it. This is a black operation. Oh my God, I hope the American people or the world don't figure out what's really going on. All of that to me is absolute speculation. But here's what's not speculation, Mike. If we were truly under attack, obviously the president would be a major target. Now, do you know about the attempted assassination of Bush that morning? Have you ever heard that one? Basically.
No, but can I say one thing, Jason?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
I think that the normal response would have been for a bunch of Secret Service to rush him, whisk him off to a limo, put
Damn
him
right.
in a flying command center, red alert, whatever they do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But we're in agreement there, Mike.
He sat back with a smile.
But that's not his decision. But that's not his decision, Mike. That's my point. That's not his decision. Under regular Secret Service protocol, Andy Card should not even have went in there to talk to him. He should have just, like you said, grabbed him, said, sorry, we have to end this. The United States is under attack. Now, of course, they've made the excuse, well, we didn't want to alarm everybody. But yes, that would have been the correct protocol. That was the Secret Service protocol that day, and it didn't happen. But I think that's more on Andy Card and the shadow government's level than George H.W. Bush. He just doesn't seem to me as a guy they would go to in the planning, as a guy they would trust to keep a secret. I don't know if they actually tried to kill him the morning of 9/11, but two guys did come up to the school that morning, said they had an interview with Bush, and the same scenario had happened the day before, and they had killed a world leader. So, again, I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree on this one. I do not think there's no doubt in my mind that Bush knew somewhat after the fact that, you know, this story wasn't the real one. But even on the level of, you know, I don't know if the guy even realized it's an inside job to this day. He's so isolated. He's a guy who wanted to be the head of the major league baseball. He had no desire to get into politics. His father forced him into politics after his other son, Neil Bush, got caught in that huge SEC scandal. So he had to parlay into Jeb and GW as the new spokesman for the family. So you may be right and I may be wrong. There's really no way to tell. But from the research that I've done, I don't believe Bush had any knowledge of 9/11 or helped in the planning of 9/11 beforehand. I do think that along the way, some things got wind, and he did obviously help with the cover-up, but we'll never know because Bush and Cheney testified not under oath together before the 9/11 Commission, and no records were kept of what they said. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Skip in California. Skip, you're on the line.
Hey, first I want to say Invisible Empire is probably the best Patriot documentary I've ever seen.
Yeah! Well, that was trying to kind of do the point. Not only trying to get the best, I guess, Patriot or conspiracy documentary out there, but something that looked like nothing else on the market and something that would look better than anything that the History Channel could put out. So those were my goals in getting that film out there.
Nice. I had three quick points I wanted to touch on.
Mm-hmm.
One is there was a CFR guy being interviewed by Chris Matthews, I think, last week, where he said, oh, I have the definition of the word sedition. You know the clip I'm talking about?
No. Please tell us about it.
Well, on InfoWars last week, they had some guy from the CFR, some kind of like press journalist or something, and I think it was on Chris Matthews, and basically they were talking about the Tea Parties, and he says, oh, I did a little research before I came out here, and then he goes over the definition of the word sedition, which was something to the effect of basically trying to convince people that they should overthrow the government, something along those lines. I forget the exact wording.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, if that guy were to say that and I was on that show, or if this issue gets brought up again, which I'm sure it will, I would say, yes, I agree. What sedition is with this Constitution, the supreme law. I mean, with this country, the supreme law of the land is the Constitution, which means, in terms of things like the Bill of Rights, where you have free speech and the right to bear arms, and you can't force or you can't make people quarter military in your home, for example. Anyone that tries to deviate from those rights that were guaranteed is indeed committing sedition. So technically he's right, but he's pointing in the wrong direction.
Yes, he's reversing on what it actually is. In fact, the states have a right to secede from the federal government when it becomes too tyrannical, when it gets too far away from the constitutional republic we once were. And we are at the point where we are no longer a constitutional republic, Skip. Unfortunately, we don't have checks and balances. The three branches of government, the judicial, executive, and legislative, do nothing to keep up those checks and balances, to check on one another, and we live in a national security state.
Unfortunately, so. I had a suggestion, maybe not for you, but anyone out there listening that might want to do this. If there were a documentary to come out as a media textbook, Media 101 textbook, which basically made it so, Alex has great discernment. He can look at what's getting reported on the news, and he can tell instantaneously what is how the manipulation is being used, what the agenda is there. Now, basically, a lot of people that are getting waking up are becoming aware of what's going on don't necessarily have that type of a discernment. So if basically there was some kind of documentary that came out that broke down what their, I guess, their textbook would be in terms of how to deceive people, how to manipulate them, using the
well, that would be a good idea for a documentary showing the mainstream media and then breaking down what they're really telling you and what this means for you, or going through mainline news articles. But I suggest people just go and check Edward Bernays' book out, Propaganda. This is the father of public relations. He lays out the case for an invisible government, a ruling class that manipulates the minds of men in the manner that you're discussing, even today with more modern tools. We're going to come back to Herman, Jason, Steve, Chuck, and others. 888-201-2244. It's the Info Warrior. Info Warrior with Jason Burks. We're going to continue to take your calls in just a moment, but I want to highlight this story. Secret U.S. spaceship launch masks even more secret launch. Huh? That's right, folks. The NASA program is there to cloak the real space program. It's there to cloak actual technology. It's to have these black sites where we don't know what's going on. We don't know the real propulsion and weapon systems that are out there. We have no clue. We are compartmentalized on a level we cannot even imagine. Somewhere above the Earth is America's latest spaceship, a 30-foot craft so classified that the Pentagon will not divulge its mission nor how much it costs to build. But the real classified project is even more secret. Somewhere above Earth is America's latest spaceship. Oh, why is it these things just keep doubling over? It's so weird. According to the Associated Press, a rocket carried an experimental hypersonic glider able to travel more than 4,000 miles in 30 minutes, blasted off over the Pacific Ocean around the same time as the X-37B, the 30th Space Wing. A Vandenberg Air Force Base acknowledged that the glider took off Thursday afternoon from the Central California coast, but the Air Force statement does not reveal the result of the test involving the Falcon Hypersonic Technology Vehicle 2. A fact sheet from the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency says the vehicle was to be accelerated into the upper atmosphere, separate from its booster, and glide across the Pacific at 13,000 miles per hour. So this shows you, again, the government is not being straight with you. They give you snippets, bits, and pieces in order to distract you from the true agenda and the real programs that are out there. Herman in New York. Herman, you're on the line. Yes, sir.
Yes, hello. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right, yes. I have two quick questions. My first question is, once the dollar collapses, pretty much how will the globalists fund the police state?
Well, they already have their money in so many other currencies. You look at people like Warren Buffett, and as the dollar was collapsing and the euro was going up, he was exchanging his dollars for euros and making a bundle on that. It won't matter to the actual globalists and power structure what the currency of the day is, because as soon as the dollar collapses, they'll have to go to something else. Now, will they go to a regional currency? Will they go to a physical form of the SDR unit? It's almost inconsequential, because when a nation has a currency that completely collapses, they're immediately in such a crisis mode that they will clamor for anything that is handed to them. And since the real power structures out there print the money out of nowhere, whether it be the dollar or the euro, since it's not backed by gold and silver, they can prop up any illegitimate fiat currency to do so and promise stability. And really, 90% of that stability will be mental. If the people believe that currency will make that the country stable again, they'll go for it. So that's how they'll fund the police state. They'll fund it through other currencies and whatever they want to use, whether it's the euro or the SDR unit or something they come up with later, like Medvedev's global currency coin he showed at the G8. What's your next question?
All right. And my next question is, I know that you and Alex don't like talking about this, but I think it's pretty much inconsequential. Will we have to kill the globalists in terms of, I don't see the leaders of the royal family in the free world, I don't see us pretty much negotiating with them, and I don't see us just putting them in jail. They'll find some way to get out, some way, somehow. So,
well, let me say this, Herman, let me say this. I'm not for the assassination of any individual, no matter how heinous and evil. That person deserves the right to a trial, the right to face his accusers. He deserves due process. And if we prosecute these people, if we put them into a court of law in which we are the jurors, as foreign by the people again, it's not some kangaroo court run by the elite, then they should be punished accordingly. But kind of suggesting this guerrilla war assassination tactics and calling for violence, that's how you get the feds at your door. That's how you become least effective, Herman. Appreciate the call. We're going to go to Jason, Steve, Chuck, and others on the other side. It's the Info Warrior.
When they tortured and scared you for 20-odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be.
And we are back. It's the final hour of the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes. If you missed any of the program, you can pick up the podcast following the program over at theinfowarrior.com or become a prisonplanet.tv subscriber, and you get this podcast and the Alex Jones podcast commercial free. That's right, commercial free at 64K. Yet another reason to get a prisonplanet.tv membership. Now, before I continue to take callers, 888-201-2244, I couldn't help but read this and laugh. 1976 shot may protect against modern H1N1. Doesn't matter there wasn't a real H1N1 outbreak. Doesn't matter that the vaccines that they put out there have been recalled by the Food and Drug Administration openly. Doesn't matter that it caused Guillain-Barré back in 1976, including death among people. Doesn't matter that I have a headline right here, toddler out of Australia, too. Dies 12 hours after taking a regular flu vaccine. They're telling you it's the greatest thing ever and that the immunization from 1976 may protect you against modern H1N1, the boogeyman of the flu virus, because it is nowhere to be found whatsoever. And they continue the propaganda months and months later. Let's go to our next caller. Let's go to Jason in Canada. Jason, you're online.
How you doing? I just saw your movie for the first time last night, and I was pretty impressed with the way you captured everyone's personal words and putting their plan together, the New World Order.
Well, thank you.
I was kind of upset with the tasteless commercial advertisement in the first section of the movie.
That's only on the free version. That's not in the DVD, obviously. So, I don't know what to tell you about that. I obviously didn't put the commercial in there, but we do need your support. If I'm going to make more movies, we have to have people buy the DVDs, or Jason Burmes I have to eat. I don't have a whole lot of money. You know, I'm moving back to New York. My bank account isn't bling bling. I drive a 98. So again, you know, if you do want to see a picture after Invisible Empire, I've got to sell DVDs. So, you know, we allow the free distribution of the DVDs. We allow that on the YouTube clips. And we encourage people to make copies of it. It's just part of the game, my friend.
Gotcha. I appreciate, you know, all the work you do. And obviously I saw the free version, so I wouldn't know the other one. I just wanted to make a couple of points there. This thing with the new law in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why there's a need to bring in a new law about the illegal immigrants instead of enforcing existing laws that already are in place.
Well, that's part of the trick. They act like they need all these new laws to just follow the old ones. It's kind of like here in Austin, where we have a sanctuary city. Well, I'm sorry, if you pull over a group of illegal immigrants for any reason, and they're illegal immigrants, they should be deported. They don't have a real driver's license. They're not a citizen of the United States of America. And I'm not saying that Mexicans shouldn't be able to become citizens of the United States of America. There is a process to do so. But that's just a big trick to say, oh, we want to get tough on our illegals. We want to get tough on the border. But all they would have to do is to enforce the existing laws to do so. And then they run this kangaroo system where they say, no, we got to have these new laws and everything's going to be great when we have these new laws. And it ends up that those new laws are really not for the illegal immigrants, but to create more of a police state here at home. And that's what that's for. Appreciate the call, Jason. Let's go to Steve in Michigan. Steve, you're online.
Hi, Jason. I just had a quick comment about the caller a few callers back. I have to disagree with him and agree with you. I don't think W has enough brain cells in his head to really know what was going on September.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about that on the other side, because I don't think the guy is a complete moron. I mean, yeah, he's moronic, and he's a guy that couldn't plan something like that, let alone carry it out. But he's also not the dumbest guy in the world. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about George W. Bush's role in 9/11. We are back. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis. We're on the line with Steve in Michigan. We're discussing George W. Bush, not H.W. Bush's, role in 9/11. And first of all, this is a president that was propped up, didn't win the real election. His father's cabinet was placed upon him. You look at the vice president, Dick Cheney. He was the Secretary of Defense under George H.W. Bush. You look at his Secretary of Defense, it's Donald Rumsfeld, another Bush player, both members of the Continuity of Government program. And then you're surrounded with people like Wolfowitz and Rove and all these other major players. And I think it helps them to put somebody in that's just going to read off a script and would himself buy into the rhetoric that the Muslims want to hurt us, the Muslims want to kill us, we have to do something. After all, Saddam Hussein tried to kill my daddy, Steve.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could be right. I mean, he's not a total complete idiot.
He's not a total complete idiot in the way that, you know, after a little while, I'm sure he never thought there were weapons of mass destruction. But at the same time, there's no way that he's on Cheney's level where they could plan out a false flag attack or the Rove level of we create reality and they knew how the people would react to such an attack. No, he's a guy that they prop up there that's an all right guy. He likes baseball. He likes golf. And he's willing to get up on the pile and scream through the megaphone and say, we're going to get these guys. So I really don't think he had anything to do with the planning. The other people around him are literal vipers, literal political aficionados that are willing to kill. They're willing to take part in genocide. They're a major part of the military-industrial complex, and I think that those guys are the major players, and Bush is kind of the scapegoat. Appreciate the call. And it also allows the establishment to say, oh, look, they're just too stupid to plan anything. Look how dumb he is. He's a two-time elected president, but come on, we all know he's such a moron that they could never carry out 9/11. Chuck in North Carolina. Chuck, you're on the line.
Hey, can I make a quick statement about GW and then move on?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, anybody, and I'm not saying that what your point isn't valid about GW, but the real apex of GW is when he's standing at the United Nations and he says, "Let us not tolerate any outrageous conspiracy theories." That's it. That's all you need to know about GW. He knew. I'm not saying he was a player. Mm-hmm. I think it's an in-between of what you and the caller were saying.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that I wouldn't say he orchestrated it, but he was along for the ride, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll say this. You know, like I said, he knew that he had to participate somewhat in the cover-up, and I believe that United Nations speech is about a month afterwards, and he does say that. He says, look, let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories that attempt to shift the blame from the real terrorists and onto the United States. So, yes, I do think he was an active participant in the cover-up and the promotion of these Muslim extremists, which did it. But I don't know how in the know he was about actually carrying it out. But you know what? You make a good point, because he talks about conspiracy theories there. And then you watch the scene in Fabled Enemies, or not Fabled Enemies, I'm sorry. You watch the scene in Invisible Empire when he's being asked about being Skull and Bones with John Kerry. And he says, I don't know, I haven't read the web pages yet. So, and then they censor, in the transcript, they censor out web pages. So maybe George Bush does read the quote-unquote conspiracy theories out there on himself. After all, he wasn't running the country. He probably had a lot of free time. Appreciate the call, Chuck. Let's go to Betty in Wisconsin. Betty, you're on the line.
Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Yeah, I watched your movie, enjoyed it. I wish I could buy a lot of them and give them to people who have good DVD players.
Just burn them. Just learn to listen. If you got a neighborhood kid and you've got a computer from the last 5 years, you can figure out a way to burn these things to disc, and that's the way you hand them out. You know how many discs I burn a day? I burn discs for my friends all the time of these AVI things. I was burning discs back in the days when I didn't even have a DVD replicator. I just had a CDR, and I had to fit them on a 700 megabyte disc. I'm telling you, there are tutorials out there. It's not as daunting as you think. And then as soon as you figure out how to do it, you'll think to yourself, man, why wasn't I doing this before? It doesn't cost an arm and a leg. We don't expect you to buy 100 DVDs. If you get the one DVD for $20 in shipping, go out, get a 30 or a 50 pack. It's usually between $10 and $30 for a 30 to 50 pack of DVDs, and you can literally just burn until your heart's content. Depending on the burner you have, it takes, you know, 15 minutes to 30 minutes to burn a disc, and then you just hand them out. So I'm telling you, Betty, get into the new technological age. It's the main tool in my eyes to fight the info war. But continue. Go ahead.
Right. We have such cold weather up here. The last time I've been out, I went by one of those red boxes. Did you ever hear of those things?
Yes.
Maybe they're up in New York.
Oh, they're everywhere.
And people get videos out of there.
Yeah.
And I stood there for an hour and handed some that I had made back in October, some of the Fall of the Republic and Fabled Enemies to people. And I felt so good about it.
Well, no, it feels good to give people information that matters. And I had a caller last week. He wasn't standing in front of the red box, but what he was doing is he was taking the DVDs that he'd burned, putting them in little white sleeves and marking them off, free DVD, and then the name of the DVD, and then taping them to the red box. So people would go up there to get their DVD, and they'd see something that said free DVD and a name, and they would pull that down too, and he would literally go through, you know, a 10-pack every day, because he just taped 10 to it when he would pass it a day, and then he would go on and grab them off. It's another great way to get the information out there. So you don't necessarily have to stand by that red box, but it doesn't hurt. I appreciate the call, and I appreciate the action, Betty. Let's go to Jeannie in Iowa. Jeannie, you're online.
I want to talk to you, Jason, about it. How you feel about if Obama is legitimate?
Whether or not he's from Kenya, right?
Well, I don't
is that what you're asking me? Well,
yeah,
I got to tell you, the evidence does show that, you know, obviously, whether or not he was born in Kenya, he is an internationalist, he is a globalist. The evidence is out there that his grandmother made the claim that he was indeed born in Kenya, and she was there. We have that 2004 AP report where they talk about the first Kenyan-born to be elected to the United States Senate. We have the debate with Alan Keyes, where Alan Keyes makes the point that he was born in Kenya, and the point has risen. Well, that may be an issue if I was running for president, and that's kind of fallen into the backdrop. Phil Berg has put out compelling evidence that the birth certificate that they tried to provide was indeed a falsification and not a real birth certificate. So obviously I lean towards where the evidence takes me. I think it is very possible, if not very probable, that he was indeed born in Kenya. But are we going to be able to get that information out to people and have them digest it in a fashion that it could actually impeach Barack Obama? I'm under the impression, Jeannie, that even if I were able to find video, and really, I don't think there's anybody better out there of finding rare video than myself. I think I do a pretty damn good job of researching stuff that has fallen into the cracks and people haven't seen. But let's say I dedicate the next 2 months of my life to trying to find video of Obama before he was a senator, and maybe he was a state senator or even before that, talking about maybe being born in Kenya. I bet you I could put a video out there where he literally talks about being born in Kenya and people would still be in denial. And I don't know if people would act on it. I think he might even serve a second term. So I hope I answered the question. I think it's very probable he was born in Kenya, but I feel like it's one of those wedge issues that we may not even be able to act upon no matter how much evidence we have. And even if we had a criminal confession, appreciate the call. Let's go to Mike in Virginia. Mike, you're online. Mike, you with us? Okay, let's go to Frank in Nevada. Frank, you are on the line, sir.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Jason?
Good, good.
Hey, I just want to tell you, you and Alex, you guys are doing a heck of a job. You're a great resource for the country.
Hey, thank you, man. What else on your mind?
All right, listen, I got one thing I got to call you on, though.
Okay.
Okay. Now, first of all, I'm a Westerner, so you got to understand my perspective on these things.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, the illegal problem in the West is beyond comprehension for folks that live in the East. I mean, you can't even imagine what it's like out here.
No, I've lived out in California. I've lived out in Los Feliz for quite some time in West Hollywood while I was trying to get loose change into theaters. When you live in Austin, Texas, you see it. You're less than 200 miles away from the border. Yes. If, for people that don't know, that are on the East Coast, and even in Florida on the East Coast, it is nowhere comparable to living in a place like Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and especially California. We are overrun with illegal immigrants that unfortunately are willing to work below the minimum wage for cash, and it has had just an incredible impact on our economy negatively. Go ahead.
Not to mention the drain on both our public resources.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's draining the economy. I mean, the public resources go hand in hand with the economy.
Drain on our public resources, our hospitals, our schools, our roads, every part of public resource. All these folks are utilizing resources, paying a single thing into the economy, while those of us who actually work for a living get taxed at an even higher rate. But my point is this, if I could just say, Arizona passed a law recently where police departments, state, city, and county police departments will see laws. You have to understand, in our republic, traditionally, immigration is being handled by the federal government. Police departments do not have the authority to enforce immigration laws.
So let me just stop you, Frank. So what you're telling me is that, because I wasn't quite familiar with the laws this guy was talking about, you're telling me that these new laws that they passed in Arizona will supersede INS and put the decisions into local police departments and sheriff departments where they can say, no, you're an illegal immigrant, we're going to send you back, because in that case, it's a good thing.
That's where my point. See, it doesn't supersede, so to speak. Basically, what it does is it gives local law enforcement the authority to actually enforce immigration laws, which they did not have until this law was passed.
And now, why do you think that they didn't have the authority to do so? What do they have the authority to do?
When our government was formed back in the revolutionary times, that authority was given to the federal government, although states could pass laws to enforce those statutes, they never actually did, because the federal government was supposed to do that.
Because the federal government actually used to work. I appreciate the call and the clarification, Frank. We're going to go to Mike, Jim, and others, 888-201-2244.
Whoa!
Whoa! We are back. It's the InfoWord with Jason Burmess. You can check us out every Sunday, 6 to 9 Central Time over at InfoWars.com or streaming live via video over at PrisonPlanet.tv. We're going to continue to take your calls, 888-201-2244. I wanted to read this article first because there may be some fear-mongering that's going to take place in the coming weeks and months regarding the next big scare like H1N1 or foot-and-mouth disease or SARS, potentially deadly fungus spreading in U.S. and Canada. A potentially deadly strain, deadly fungus, it's always deadly, oh my God, we're all going to die. A potentially deadly strain of fungus is spreading among animals and people in the northwestern United States and Canada province of British Columbia, researchers reported on Thursday. The airborne fungus called Cryptococcus gatti usually only infects transplant and AIDS patients and people with otherwise compromised immune systems, but the new strain is genetically different, the researchers said. This novel fungus is worrisome because it appears to be a threat to otherwise healthy people, said Edmund Burns of Duke University in North Carolina, who led the study. The findings presented here document that an outbreak of Cryptococcus gatti in Western North America is continuing to expand throughout the temperate region, the researchers said in their report published by the Public Library of Science Journal. So I'm just warning people out there, if you hear about some new deadly fungus, don't worry, the sky's not falling, everything's going to be okay, but we may see some fear-mongering. So I want to read that article to the listeners. Mike in Massachusetts. Mike, you're on the line.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for taking my call. Just a follow-up to our earlier conversation.
Sure.
About Bush, if that's okay. I want to say I totally agree with you. Bush did certainly not plan it. I mean, let's face it, the guy isn't smart enough, okay? Mm-hmm. And number two, that's not his role in our farcical government. We all know that. He's going to read the teleprompter, lie, and tell jokes, you know?
Sure.
However, I think that if I were on a jury, and the only question was, did he have prior knowledge, and they showed me that videotape, it's an open and shut case, Jason. Of course he had prior knowledge. I mean,
I think it's an open and shut case for sure, Michael, that, he had prior knowledge, again, with the PDB memo and other documentation in that regards. And I think it also shows that the Secret Service or the National Security Apparatus obviously had some kind of prior knowledge that he wasn't in danger because the attacks were ongoing and they had two rogue planes. At the time, I think it was more around 6 or 7. If you look at Delta 1989, if you look at the Korean Air flights and some of the other hijackings that actually took place that day, they knew that they had rogue planes in the air and that the president was known to be in that school in Florida. So that could have been a target, but the Secret Service knew it wasn't a target. They went to him after the second part of the attack. I mean, we have Bush. So you want to talk about prior knowledge or just lying in general. We've got Bush on two separate occasions saying that he saw the first attack live somehow. And anybody who knows anything about the World Trade Center attacks knows that they did not show the first plane strike of the World Trade Center. And there's only really one video of it. There's a second video that doesn't really show a plane, but you can see the explosion. Anyway, that one video didn't come out until later that evening. And he's on record twice saying that he saw it live before he went into that classroom. Now, that would either be impossible because it wasn't broadcast live, or mean that somebody else taped it and did broadcast it to the president live, which would be even more suspicious. So if we're talking about getting him on some kind of prior knowledge, I would probably use that evidence and not his reaction. But again, I appreciate the calls and I appreciate the perspective. I'm more than willing to admit I'm a human being. I make mistakes and I definitely don't know everything or have all the answers. Appreciate the call. Jim in Florida. Jim, you're on the line. Yes,
hey, Jason, I just wanted to say that Invisible Empire was great, so was that police state. My first point, and then I'd like to follow up, is have you seen the YouTube video of the U.S. senator that is calling out, or I don't think it's a senator, but he's calling out the senator.
You're talking about the guy who's calling out Lindsey Graham?
Yeah, Lindsey Graham calling him out on his homosexuality.
Well, it wouldn't be a shocker to me. Yeah. Hold on, Jim, because we're coming up to break. I'm going to hold you over. We'll come back to you on the other side. I have not seen the video, but I have seen it posted on my Facebook and other things. And it's at a Tea Party event. And, I'm one of the guys that obviously believes that Lindsey Graham happens to be a closeted homosexual. And should he out himself? Yes, because he's taking Christian conservative money. But let's get into that issue on the other side, because it's something I touch upon in Invisible Empire.
Running to Babylon. Run all the way to Babylon. Me, you there in Babylon.
All right, we are back, and we're talking to Jim in Florida about Lindsey Graham and this gentleman at one of the tea parties asking for him to come out as a homosexual. Now, personally, I think your life choices are your own. You should be able to be with anybody you want to be, although I'm not a proponent of gay marriage. I think that they should have the same type of rights, whether or not it's called. I think, you know, leave marriage to the Christians out there, to the men and women couples, give them something else. As long as they have the same rights, I don't care. Now, that being said, I am not a fan of the hypocrisy out there. In other words, a lot of these people act like they're Christian conservatives when, in fact, they're not Christian or conservative. They're occultic homosexuals. And you look at the evidence we present in Invisible Empire, and we show you how in the Bohemian Grove, where they do these occultic rituals, they also cross-dress and they hire homosexual prostitutes and gay porn stars to service them at the Grove. But what really disturbs me, and I'm not saying that Lindsey Graham has any part in this, is that it delves much deeper, and some of these people are part of pedophile rings, both homosexual and straight. In other words, they rape young boys and young girls. Now, we didn't delve that deeply into that aspect in Invisible Empire. We just kind of show you the callboy rings. We show you the callboy prostitution ring that not only went into the White House, but was being run out of Barney Frank's bedroom through a guy named Stephen Gobi. And the guy that kind of connected both of those was a man named Craig Spence, who was suicided in a hotel. Now, the point of Lindsey Graham being outed, I do think these people should be outed because they're taking Christian conservative money and they're acting as though they're proponents of those belief systems when, in fact, they are not, Jim. And I suggest people watch a documentary by a man named Kirby Dick. It's called Outrage, and it outs a lot of the closeted homosexuals, not only in government, but in media, that demonize homosexuality while taking part in it. So I hope I answered your question, Jim. I appreciate the call. We're going to go to Michael in Canada. Michael, you're online.
Hey, Jason. I watched a documentary last night on CBC, Passionate Eye, by Mike Rudin, who's a friend of mine, mm-hmm. Called Finding Bin Laden. Mm-hmm. And he did an amazing job. It's really it's a great film.
Wait, Mike Rudin? Is he a BBC producer?
No, Mike Rudin is an independent producer, and he actually sold the documentary to the CBC Passionate Eye.
Okay,
Rudin,
okay.
R-U-D-I-N.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, he had a lot of representation from both sides, obviously, and a lot of CIA guys and a lot of conspiracy theorists or so-called conspiracy theorists. And there was one issue that really struck me. He went to the, you know, to the point that basically Bin Laden was a CIA asset, and the deniability across the board was just unbelievable, right? You mm-hmm. know, saying that, yeah, we were giving Bin Laden weapons, but at the time, you know, we were just, it was our last hope. We were just trying to defeat the Russians in Afghanistan, blah 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 blah. But there also was an outright denial of the fact that Bin Laden was treated in an American hospital in Dubai. Mm-hmm. And I know that was in your film, and I've gotten to know you quite well, and mm-hmm. I know that you must have some factual information to back that mm-hmm. statement up. Just, would you mind just telling me, you know, how did you find that information?
Yeah, like, it was mainline front page in France in man, I can't think of, guys, type that in, Bin Laden in a U.S. hospital, and find out which French publication put it on the front page. because it was a French publication that put it on the front page. But to go back to another French publication, which talks about bin Laden and the CIA, they admit, oh, it was our last hope against the Soviets. No, Brzezinski and Robert Gates, our current Secretary of Defense, he admits this in his memoirs, and then it was backed up in Le Nouvel Observateur. We show you the article in Invisible Empire that indeed we were funding bin Laden and the Taliban prior to the Soviet invasion to goad the Soviets in to create that Cold War scenario. And then later on, after the 9/11 attacks, it did come out that U.S. covert agencies were funding bin Laden through BCCI banking. Now, other than the mainline report that he was at that hospital in Dubai, which again, I believe it was from, I think it was from France. I'm almost 100% certain. Did you find it? Hold on. Go ahead, Matt. What do you got for me? The Daily Le Figueroa. It's on, yeah. Le Figueroa is the original publication of that. However, I don't have this in Fabled Enemies or my films, but you can watch Press for Truth. And the night before 9/11, bin Laden was being trained in treated in a Pakistani hospital where the Pakistani military came in, took out all these separate doctors, then surrounded the area. And obviously, U.S. intelligence knows this. And remember, the Pakistanis, the ISI, which we set up, actually British intelligence set up in the 50s, and then it was revamped in the 70s and 80s through U.S. intelligence, they were the ones funding the hijackers. So if you're looking for the source on the bin Laden being treated at a CIA hospital, that's Le Figueroa. But if you want to see the video report by Dan Rather of bin Laden being treated at a Pakistani hospital the night of 9/11 and being surrounded by Pakistani military, you can see that in Press for Truth. Did I answer your question, Michael?
It sure does. And actually, the Pakistani intelligence were in the documentary completely denying that ever happened as well. It was interesting because I know Mike, and Mike was coming at this from a guy that basically has woken up and trying to become a mainstream media guy to sort of, I guess he'd always worked for the CBC, and he was trying to come at it from the point, look, I'm going to present both sides. And the deniability and the ability for these people to just stand there and bold-faced lie, you know, as I've seen it with you in 9/11 debunked and what have you, I mean, it's just unbelievable that they continue to do it. But the masses were just brainwashed folks that just sit there and we take the spoon-fed stuff and go, oh, yeah. Now, Richard Gage was fantastic in this film, and Mike gave him a great chunk of time, and I think he'll like it.
What's it called again? Is it called Finding Bin Laden? Finding Bin Laden?
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to look for a copy tonight and try to watch it this week. I appreciate the call and the tip, Michael. Let's go to our next caller. Let's go to Cliff in Colorado. The call in line is 888-201-2244. Go ahead, Michael. Go ahead, Cliff.
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Boycott Arizona. Blame it on the immigrants is one of the oldest divide and conquer tricks in the book. Mm-hmm. Hitler did it too.
Well, I'm not saying that you can blame the immigrants for the you know, the nation's economic demise, but it certainly is part of the globalist command and control system to integrate Mexico with Canada and the United States to get a North American union. I don't think that the illegals are the reason that our economy is in the shambles it is in today, but chipping away in the last 10, 15, 20 years of an economy where we don't pay these people minimum wage and they don't pay into the tax system and they're not part of the federal and state government tax programs, yes, that is going to have a toll on the economy, but it is a divide and conquer when you're like, I hate the Mexicans or how dare they come in there. No, we have a way to come into this country and become a United citizen, whether you're from Mexico or you're from Vietnam. So I see arguments on both sides, and I'm of the argument that I wouldn't kick anybody out of this country. I would allow everybody to stay. However, they would have to go through the process of becoming an American citizen so that it wasn't just amnesty and that they were paid regular wages and paid into the tax system the same way. But before they do that, we actually have to secure our borders, both on the north and the south. And when we do that, I believe that we can allow, I guess, the country to become a sanctuary country in the sense that we don't have to just kick everybody out. But they do have to become United States citizens. I believe they have to go through that process. Otherwise, we will just have an amalgamation of Canada, Mexico, and the United States and the North American Union that the globalists want. Cliff, go ahead.
Well, thanks. Well, I just think this legislation is a continuation of the racist foundation, slavery and Native genocide, on which this country was built. And patriotism and racism often fit like a hand in glove. So I just want to say, please remember, most Americans have immigrant ancestors.
Well, no, I agree there, too, and I don't think necessarily that patriotism and racism go hand in hand. I do see people using jingoistic tactics to try to demonize other nation states and other races of people, but I see it from both sides. Look, I live in a community where me and my landlord speak English. That's it. Okay, my next-door neighbor doesn't speak English. People to the right of me don't speak English. They're obviously illegal immigrants. They're very nice people. They, you know, the one guy has come over, said, hey, you want to use my weed whacker? You know, I've played a little bit with their kids, thrown them the soccer ball a couple times. No one's against the people, but the system that, again, pays these people less than minimum wage, creates a system in which honest contractors can no longer make a living, again, puts us into this command and control system that consolidates power, and I think that's the real problem. Appreciate the call, Cliff. Let's go to Tribal Reality. Tribal Reality, you're on the air.
How are you, man?
Good, good.
All right, I'd like to say a lot of things, but I'd like to get to, like, a couple points real quick. One of them being, like, how to get the information out there. If I can, like, name a couple programs, I can, like, tell people exactly how to get information and get it out there the easiest way possible.
Go ahead.
All right, get yourself Firefox. Get the add-on download helper. You can get any media you want from any web page. It's video, audio, anything. And mm-hmm. then get yourself DVD Flick, and you can burn that to a DVD in like 30 minutes. So you can just download.
Tell people that again, because I get so many emails, man. Oh, like people complain to me that the DVD doesn't fit on a regular DVD. That's because we give you the DVD in the highest quality. It's a DVD 9. And it has to be recompressed to fit on a DVD 5, but you can burn it to a DVD 9. You just have to buy those, or you have to recompress it. And there are programs out there that will allow you to download the free versions off the internet and then convert them to DVD files. So I'm going to let Tribal Reality to tell you how to do it again in the simplest way possible. Go ahead.
Get yourself Firefox. They have it on every operating system possible. Then you get the add-on download helper. You can get any media from any site. Any video you see on your computer, you can download almost. Mm-hmm. But, like, YouTube videos, everything like that, you can download, and they give you, like, three different formats.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter which format you choose. Get DVD Flick, and it'll turn it. You can just set it up however you want, and you can... You can even compress it like you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
the 4.7 for regular DVD-Rs,
mm-hmm.
and it's totally free, and you can burn them off. It takes 30 minutes, man, and I do it all the time. I've woken up many people. It's like the greatest feeling in the world to get someone at 2 in the morning to call you up, and they're not talking about being in jail. They're talking about not wanting to be a slave, and
that's
then
right.
You got to talk through it, and so they can sleep that night. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, from what you know and what I know, because, you know, honestly, I've gotten most of my education, a good percent of it, from your videos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with the banking system, how America, where we were, how we got here,
mm-hmm.
where we are now. People need to learn, man. I mean, people are worried about the dumbest thing possible. And
no, American Idol is very important. Barack Obama and his wife said so. That's what's important. Our sports teams are important. We're in the NBA playoffs, and baseball season has just kicked off. We shouldn't be focusing on the banker bailouts. We shouldn't be focusing on the G20 and the global international regulation of marketplaces. We shouldn't be focusing on SDR units, and we shouldn't be focusing on the thousands of calls for a new world order. Or should we? Should we be concerned with our lives? Should we take charge? Should we break out of the carbon copy clones, the plastic people that our rulers want to shape us into? I think we should. I think we should educate others. I think we should activate and come up against this system of tyranny and restore the republic once again. Appreciate the call and the tutorial for people that weren't listening. Again, you get a download program off of Firefox. A lot of people out there are already using Firefox. You get the add-on downloads, and I guess it's DVD Flick. It's a free download. It'll convert all these files to DVD. It'll even shrink your DVD that you ordered from PrisonPlanet.tv to get onto a 4.7 gigabyte disk. All right, let's go to David in New Jersey. David, you're online.
What's up, Jason?
Hey, hey.
Have you heard of the education cuts in Jersey?
Yeah. Yeah, well, Jersey's just one of the places. Michigan is another place, but from what I've heard in Jersey, a lot of people are losing their jobs. We had somebody call in here saying, you know, coming from a teacher's family, their parents were teachers, they became a teacher, both their mother and father were out of work, and then they had recently been released, and all they could get was temporary work, basically substitute jobs in different areas. Are you feeling that as well?
Yeah, there's a thing going on Facebook of a student-wide school walkout. I got a text message from my friend reminding me that it's tomorrow. And I feel like if that actually pulls through, that's the perfect opportunity to wake up people, because all this debt was caused by Corzine, who was a Bilderberger. And I guess he did it, like, spent so much money on education to put us in debt to make us slaves, basically.
Well, the bottom line is nonviolent civil disobedience is the best tool to fight the establishment, to fight the system, to really oppose things like cutting school programs, cutting teachers. We had that one school in Rhode Island that fired every single teacher in one day. They're just like, you know what, we'll just get rid of all of them. They can't complain with the new systems. That's how we roll. Ultimate tyranny. Ultimate tyranny. Appreciate the call, David. Let's go to Shane in Virginia. Shane, you're on the line.
Hey, how's it going, Jason?
Good.
I was wondering if I could plug the Worldwide Marijuana March 2010 in Washington, D.C. this year.
Go for it.
All right. It's happening on Saturday, May 8th, and it starts at noon in Lafayette Park in Washington, D.C. Some of the speakers are from the Students for Sensible Drug Policy through my school, the Northern Virginia Community College in Woodbridge. And there's going to be a band playing. There's four or five bands, actually. It's a concert that starts at 2. The march starts at 1. We gather at 12 at Lafayette Park. We go from Lafayette to the Joan of Arc statue, Upper Meridian Hill Park. And at the park, there's going to be a performance by the Lucky Dub Band, Golden Butter Band, Unfortunate Sons, Feed God Cabbage, Earlheim, the Echo Movement, and a few more. The Students for Sensible Drug Policy actually supports you guys.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I'm a proponent of the decriminalization of marijuana throughout the country. And, you know, a couple years ago, I went to Boston on behalf of a High Times thing to talk about Fabled Enemies and Loose Change Final Cut. And I discussed something with this author who had been talking about parapolitics as well. So, you know, I'm here as well. Appreciate the call. We're going to come back. Final segment of the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes, PrisonPlanet.tv, InfoWars.com.
If you believe in redemption, I'm calling to you from another dimension.
Final segment of the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes. If you missed any of the program, you go to theinfowarrior.com following and pick up the podcast. I want to hit up this final story, this late-breaking story right here. State reps want to fight violence with National Guard's help. Oh, because there's so much violence out there. We need to bring in the National Guard. Oh, just like in Kent State when you brought in the National Guard and they shot and killed students. Two state representatives called on Governor Pat Quinn Sunday to deploy the Illinois National Guard to safeguard Chicago's streets. Oh, the National Guard's going to be on the streets to assist the police. They beta tested this where? At the G20. That's why you need Police State 4, the Rise of FEMA. Get it with Invisible Empire. Chicago Democrats John Fritchie and LaShawn Ford said they want Quinn, Mayor Richard Daley, and Chicago police support Jody Weiss to allow guardsmen to patrol streets and help quell violence. Oh, Chicago is too violent. The police can't handle it anymore. The National Guard need to. The epitome of a police state is when you have the military as the police. Oh, so now somebody's going to tell me on the streets of Chicago with an automatic machine gun that I'm in trouble, I'm too violent, I'm under arrest, or maybe I don't even get a trial. Maybe it's judge, jury, and executioner right there as I take a couple rounds right to the face, right to the grizzle. Maybe that's the way we should roll. Is this a drastic call to action? Of course it is, Fritchie said. Is it warranted when we are losing residents to gun violence at such an alarming rate? Without question. No, I think there's a big question of whether you should be putting more police on the streets. Maybe take some of the corruption out of Chicago's police department, because it's one of the most corrupt in the country, along with Los Angeles and NYPD. Okay. Maybe get rid of some of the corruption. Don't bring in the National Guard to patrol the streets. I'm sure this is going to be a huge story over at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com shortly. If it's not already up there, it needs to be. Kurt and Paul need to get on this one. What he envisions, Fritchie said, is a heightened presence on the streets, particularly on the roughly 9% of city blocks where most of the city's violent crimes occur. So now if you live in a poor area, if you're in an urban environment, you're going to be policed by the military. Forget about posse comitatus, the separation of military and police. The National Guard are supposed to be used sparingly in the event of an earthquake, in the event of a riot, a mass riot, a huge fire, okay, in case the state needs help. The National Guard are not to be used to police the streets because it's too violent there. There's too much gun violence. We need to bring in the National Guard. So what, 2 weeks from now when they implement this policy and the National Guard are on the streets and they shoot some kid who's 19 years old that was carrying a gun, that's a good thing? They did good? All right, we're fighting for America! No, it's not cool. It's the slow incrementalization of a police state coming to fruition. That's what this is. When they tell you that they can have the National Guard on the streets of Chicago, they can have them in the most rural of places in Illinois. Tyranny starts small and then it expands and it grows like a cancerous virus. And we have to be aware of that. We have to fight and rebel against that. If you're living in Chicago right now, these state representatives need to lose their jobs. These career politicians need a message. We don't want the National Guard on our streets. Folks, I want to thank you for joining me for the full 3 hours. Again, if you missed any of the program, go to theinfowarrior.com, pick up the podcast. And don't forget, my latest, my greatest film is out there, Invisible Empire, A New World Order Defined. Get it today and help support the InfoWar.